TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves. The Raised by Wolves podcast.
It's never been something that we were too worried about. I mean, for me personally, I mean, like I said, it's something I keep writing about and kept trying to say that we were having this problem and stuff. You know, we weren't winning games not because of that. We weren't winning games because we just weren't playing no defense. That's the problem. So, you know, for us, it's every day, whoever's available to play the game and wearing a Minnesota Timberwolves jersey, we got to go out there and compete. We went out there, competed. We didn't get the job done recently, but, you know, it's about going out there, playing defense, scoring a few baskets, and having more points than the other team.
I think so. I just think that it was this stuff going back and forth. I thought the locker room was great, but just the management and different things like that is always tough when we're trying to win games and you're not winning games. When you lose in the locker room, it kind of like a black cloud. Everybody's kind of down on themselves a little bit. But like I said, it's a new day, new guys coming in. Just got to push forward.
All right, there you go. A couple of comments from Carl Anthony Towns and Taj Gibson in reaction to the big news surrounding the Timberwolves over the weekend of the Jimmy Butler trade to the Philadelphia 76ers. Welcome. This is a live edition of Raised by Wolves. I'm Manny Hill, and here in studio with me, Danny Cunningham, who covers the Wolves for us here at 1500 ESPN, and Dane Moore, 1500ESPN.com contributor. And also of zone coverage. And guys, this is, it was interesting because Danny, you texted me on Saturday when this news broke, and I was in the middle of a nap because I was enjoying a Saturday where I was.
You were napping at like 10 a.m. on a Saturday. That's early for a nap.
I know. I woke up kind of early that morning and then took a nap and tried to catch up on some sleep and I was preparing to just wake up from my nap and watch some college football the whole day and, you know, watch my Vols take on Kentucky. And then this happens, this bombshell happens, that Butler is headed to Philadelphia. And I guess more than anything, I mean, let's just get our initial thoughts from the trade. Danny, we did an emergency Raised by Wolves on Saturday. So we kind of, gave our thoughts on the deal sort of immediately afterwards. But Dane, we'll start with you. I mean, what were your initial thoughts on the trade and what the Wolves are getting back from him or from Philadelphia for Jimmy Butler?
I think for me, the biggest thing I think about is the Timberwolves are locked into a core right now. As you look into the salaries and how we already have big salaries for Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns, this is your group. You have Towns, Wiggins, Gorgui Dieng, Dario Saric, and Robert Covington for your future. So that's great that Jimmy Butler's not a part of that, but something I'm looking at and considering is how good is that core going forward? You're capped out. There's not going to be meaningful room to adjust anything through free agency. It's going to be critical to nail all draft picks going forward and making little moves on the margins. But I mean, I'm excited that Butler's gone and it's going to be a new day here, but it becomes a question of what's your goal? You know, are you trying to be a contender, or are you trying to be a good team, a playoff team? And as this roster is constructed right now for this season and for going forward, I think you're looking at best 6, 7, 8 seed. And that's okay.
And that was one of my questions too, is how happy can you be, because this team has a very fixed ceiling now.
Yeah.
They're not going to turn into a championship contender unless one, Andrew Wiggins turns into something that everyone's kind of given up faith that he can be. If Andrew Wiggins becomes a bona fide star, then I think your ceiling raises quite a bit and you become a much better team than we can project right now. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. We haven't seen anything that's shown us that, okay, yeah, he can be a perennial all-star. Now they've got one all-star. They've got a bunch of good role players. But in today's NBA, that's not going to get you a trophy. That's not going to get you, like you said, anything more than a six seed, especially in the West.
Yeah, with the way Golden State and Houston, I mean, Houston's off to a rough start, but you kind of get the sense that they're going to get things on track once everybody sort of gets healthy and back into their groove. Yeah, I mean, the way the league is constructed now, like, you need multiple all-stars to even have a chance to really even contend. I mean, even...
Or even just a path to getting those stars.
Yeah, to even get into the playoffs, it seems like you need that now.
I mean, two all-stars. And Manny, you and I talked about this on Saturday a little bit. The only chance for them to add an all-star at this point is for them to be really bad for the rest of this season, get a high pick, and hope that that guy turns into an all-star. Because other than that, there is no avenue to add someone of that caliber for the next, what, 4 years?
And that's what I'm saying. It's about finding ways to have those avenues.
Yeah.
It's okay if you don't have three or four stars like the Warriors. That's really hard to do. What I would say is not okay is to go down a path that has one all-star on it, maybe two maximum. You need, if contending is the goal, you need to open up avenues to have a team with lots of top-end talent. And this team has good players, as you said, Danny, but top-end talent, we're looking at one player.
And to be the Warriors, you have to get lucky a little bit. Let's be honest there. They got lucky that Steph Curry got hurt when he did and signed that deal that was 4 years, $44 million, and were able to have him come back and become one of the five best basketball players in the world. And just those circumstances that took place out in California are not taking place anywhere else in the NBA. So that's a bad example. Now, no other team's going to have four All-Stars or five All-Stars now is because they've got Boogie Cousins, right, too. So the Wolves striving to be that is a little bit foolish. I think any NBA team striving to create that, a lot of it takes dumb luck, which they got. And the Wolves aren't going to get that. But now they don't even have the opportunity to really get that. Again, the only avenue they have to add a star is either tanking this season and drafting someone high or Andrew Wiggins turning into that. And I don't know how likely either of those scenarios are.
I wonder, too, over the next 5 years, or I guess maybe 3 or 4 years, you have Cat in place, which is good, and the Wiggins deal, it seems like it's something that, unless he really turns into something, it feels like it's just something you're going to have to endure until you can maybe find a way to move it down the line, if that's even possible.
But it is possible.
Takes that?
It is possible.
Right. Who would take that?
It is possible, and somebody can and will take it. I know we have all of us, myself included, I'm harsh on Andrew, disappointed in what he is. But I'm telling you, from talking to plenty of people around the league, it was when I was in Vegas for Summer League, I had tons of conversations, and to a man out there, every person I talked to said, it is possible to move Andrew Wiggins' contract even without giving up assets. Mm. There will be a team eventually that convinces themselves into saying, We're gonna bring something out of him that Sam Mitchell, Flip Saunders, and Tom Thibodeau couldn't. There is a talent there and a desperate team who maybe swings and misses on Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, or even somebody else 2 or 3 years down the road. I want to push back on that narrative that it's completely impossible. If I were running a franchise, would I trade for Andrew Wiggins on a max contract? No, but there might be a time where a team wants to land a young player to go and do that, and that is possible. So maybe that's another avenue because it would get you off of the contract itself. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, though.
It's going to take another dysfunctional team, which there are a couple. I mean, you can look at Washington's incredibly dysfunctional right now, and Cleveland, I think, holds the title for the most dysfunctional franchise in the NBA. So it's possible. I just don't see it as likely anytime soon.
I guess the point I was making, though, is over the next few years, now that you have Cat locked up into place for the next 5 years, I feel like you almost have to let this thing sort of slow cook while Golden State and Houston and Boston and all these teams are in contention. You have to stop trying to match those teams right now and just try like hell to, you know, acquire assets over the next couple of years, whether it's draft picks or, you know, whatever moves that you can make, and get yourself in a position, try to set yourself up to contend, you know, 3-4 years down the line. Now you gotta make some right moves, and you can't really whiff on draft picks anymore, and you know, they're kind of not in that position to sort of withstand that. But this idea of thinking, and Danny, we kind of talked about this on Saturday, that this idea of thinking that they're a playoff team right now is just secondary right now. Now it's the more, see what you have in Robert Covington, see if he can be, I mean, he's locked up in a pretty nice deal. Dario Saric is the wild card here for me. Like, I really want to see what he can be. He had a really good year last year with the Sixers. He's had some struggles this year, and I'd be curious to see, you know, what they can get out of him, and if he ends up being a long-term piece here. We're going to have Derek Bodner from The Athletic in Philadelphia. We're going to have him on at about 1:30. He's going to join us and give his perspective on it. There's a lot of things we can ask Derek about what Jimmy Butler can bring to the Sixers and what Minnesota fans can expect to see out of Covington and Saric. So that's going to come up at about 1:30. We can also take your phone call, 651-646-8255. What do you think about the Jimmy Butler trade? What are your thoughts on all the speculation surrounding Tom Thibodeau's future, which obviously the three of us can get into here very soon. So stay tuned for all of that. There was an interesting piece on The Athletic that came out about an hour or so ago.
Manny, I don't think interesting does it justice. I think you need a little bit stronger of an adjective than interesting.
Daunting. Will that work?
Yeah, jarring.
Jarring, sure.
Jarring. Sure. I mean, this piece, and credit to Johnny Kay and Shams for it, but man, it is unbelievable the things that are revealed on The Athletic right now by this.
Yeah, I mean, it basically, they lay out, Johnny Kay and Shams basically lay out the timeline of the Jimmy Butler saga, even dating all the way back to the end of last season when the Rockets eliminated the Wolves from the playoffs. And basically, it sounds like Jimmy Butler informed this team multiple times during the summer that he was not happy here and that he may want out. And it just sounds like the whole summer that everybody was just sort of dragging their feet and nobody really took it seriously and nobody really addressed it.
There's one person who can address it, because you have the head coach is also the president of basketball operations.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to. And I get that. Jimmy Butler gives Tom Thibodeau the best chance to win this year in his mind. And that's probably true. Jimmy Butler's better than Robert Covington and Dario Saric at basketball this season. And that's why the flaw, as it has been all along, was that you had your coach be the director of your basketball decisions. That doesn't work. When you have the confliction of now and tomorrow, and the same guy, you know, has different motivations for those two times, it doesn't work. And so that's how we got here. I mean, you can't do that.
How much better of a position would the Wolves be in if they had someone over Tibbs? Like, if they had someone in power over him as his boss, this headache wouldn't have existed nearly to the extent that it did. You can say that he was dragging his feet or didn't take Jimmy Butler's request seriously, but this comes down to ego. Tibbs had an ego that was big enough to think that he could be a reason that they changed Jimmy Butler's mind. It wasn't that he didn't take the request seriously. It's that he thought highly enough of himself and the way that he was going to run this team this year that he could change his mind. And that was never going to happen. And that's the fact of it. And that's where the problem is.
But if you're him, if you're Tom Thibodeau, put yourself in Tom Thibodeau's shoes. Your job is on the line dependent on what you do this season.
Sure.
And obviously, by making a trade, for example, that 4 first-round picks deal and salary cap filler, you're not making the playoffs with that mm-hmm. team. And you might not with one of the Miami offers, or your odds of doing so are decreased. So Tom Thibodeau was incentivized to, as you said, Danny, to never do it. Mm-hmm. That's why the problem is the job he was given. Yep. And the person who gave him that job was the Timberwolves owner. That is the problem.
And that was one of the first things that came into my mind when this deal was first reported on Saturday morning, is that making this trade and the only pick you're getting is a 2022 second, is he is feeling quite a bit of heat under his chair right now, because he's on the hot seat. There's no question about that. But by not trading for picks and not incentivizing that they want to build for the future and they want to try and save whatever they can get from this season that they've started 4-9 and 0-8 on the road, and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to dig out of this hole, in my opinion. He's coaching for his job, and he's making a trade with his job on the line. I don't know how great it is for the future of this franchise, but he is absolutely trying to save himself right now.
We haven't touched on the pick, and so I think that's a good point. And I think you can be simultaneously excited about Robert Covington and Dario Saric,
sure,
and also very disappointed that I mean, the Sixers are going to be a really good team in 2022. Mm-hmm. That pick's almost nothingness.
That could be the 60th pick in the draft.
Sure.
Potentially could be the very last selection in the NBA draft.
So, I mean, the question becomes negotiating and, you know, pushing for something more. Maybe you can't get a first round pick from them, but they own Chicago's second round pick this season. Chicago's terrible. That's a pick that would have had value. That
feels like Philadelphia has had more second round picks from not only themselves, but other teams that they've acquired than anyone in the history of the NBA.
That is true. That's actually a fact. It's
it is unbelievable how many second round picks that they have accrued. And for them to get Philadelphia's own two in 2022 is not great.
That was probably all Sam Hinkie too, right? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was the process. Yeah. That was part of the process, which is now over. I think that we can say that the trust the process era in Philadelphia is officially closed down with the acquisition of Jimmy Butler. They go from being processing to they're going for it.
Let's take a break here. 651-646-8255. You're listening to Raised by Wolves Live. Manny Hill, Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham. And coming up at about 1:30, we're going to have our guest, Eric Bodner of The Athletic in Philadelphia. He's going to weigh in on the Jimmy Butler trade that happened over the weekend with the Wolves and the 76ers. 651-646-8255. Give us a call. Let us know what you think on the trade and what your thoughts are on the future of the Minnesota Timberwolves after the post-Jimmy Butler era. We'll be back in just a moment.
It's been crazy, but like I said before, this is the pros. You're going to deal with this all year long, no matter if it's trades, no matter it's not every team's going to get along. But at the end of the day, it comes down to guys going out there doing their job, playing hard for the city and hard for the team. But now this thing is behind us. Now we can just move forward, give the new players and try to change this thing around, because nobody likes losing. And the atmosphere in here is everybody's still hungry to win games. So just got to move forward.
Those the words of Taj Gibson, Timberwolves forward on this whole situation. Raised by Wolves Live is back. And Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, all here. And Tom Thibodeau. So we talked about him a little bit at the end of the last segment. And what is next now for him? Like, where do we go from him from here? Because I know Woj put out the story that he is... This whole blow up with Jimmy Butler and the trade and everything could signal the end for Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota. And so now it's, I guess, more of what happens next. How long is this going to sort of go on with Tom Thibodeau sort of leading this group? And, you know, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that's always been kind of the assumption, is that once a Butler trade happened, that there was going to be this we're waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of mentality. It would make sense. I mean, Tom Thibodeau mortgaged some of the future to go get Jimmy Butler. He tied himself directly to Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler all but stabbed him in the back, and now this is where you're at. I mean, I don't know if it's imminent. Tom Thibodeau was at Shoot Around this morning, spoke to the media. He's coaching the game tonight. I think, and we've said this before, it's important to consider what Tom Thibodeau's also guaranteed contract is. Mm-hmm. He has not only this season, but two more seasons where he's making $8 million a year. He's also tied to a front office who have their own salaries. If you cut him out right now and that whole group, you don't have a front office, you don't have a coach. Yes, I mean, you can paste over some of that, but in the process of the aftermath of what's happening now, that would be kind of hard to do. So are they delaying the inevitable, or is it is this just more of a holding pattern? I get why they didn't happen at the exact same time, is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is delaying the inevitable, and there was a line in Woj's report that came out yesterday that really stuck out to me, and word for word, this is what he put in that article. He said, Taylor kept doubling down, and when he hung up the phone with Philadelphia owner Josh Harris on Saturday morning, Minnesota had lost everything. the four-time All-Star in his prime, the trade standoff, and ultimately the trust to stay with Thibodeau and GM Scott Layden beyond this season.
That's not true. I mean, they didn't lose everything. They got Dario Saric and Robert Covington back, and they have Carl Towns on a max contract. I mean, Woj is usually very, very much a reporter, but a lot of that is his own subjective opinion of what everything is to this team. Like, the Wolves aren't totally cooked.
No, I'm... Not the whole they lost everything part sticks out to me. It's the trust
out to me
to Tibbs and Scott Layden beyond the season being gone. That's what stuck out to me. Because, yeah, whether or not they lost everything, they did lose a four-time All-Star in his prime. Whether or not they won or lost the trade, I think, is to be determined. It's silly to judge winners and losers of a trade 48 hours after it happens and an hour and 24 minutes after it becomes official. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a silly thing to say. But the fact that the writing's on the wall for this president of basketball operations / coach and the general manager is the biggest thing that stuck out to me from that quote.
I guess I just thought the writing was already on the wall.
and that's fair, but that was pretty damning for them.
That's true. I guess I just wanted, in reading that whole report, or I would say more of a column from Woj, was that they're, I don't know. I mean, he was imparting a lot of his own opinion on the situation there. I think we can be somewhat concerned about the return the Wolves got back, yada, yada, yada. We talked about the salary cap. But this team, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say everything is done and it's all melting. Towns is here. He's a great player, and he's here for 5 more years after this season. There's other good pieces here too. So yes, things can be over for Tom Thibodeau and Layden, but not for the Minnesota Timberwolves franchise at large.
I wonder too about, because of the way the power structure is set up, you know, because you have so many people saying that, well, you know, they need to fire Tibbs right now, and but the thing of it is, Dan, you talked about it. Tibbs has both jobs. He's the president of basketball operations and he's the head coach. So if you part with him, okay, it's easier probably to find someone to step in and coach the team. But if you part ways with Tibbs as the president of basketball operations mid-season, then just do you keep Scott Layden around and let him? Because somebody still has to run the front office. And if you do that in the middle of a season,
More deals probably coming too this year. I mean, or could. I mean, you can make more moves this season.
And it all boils down to what is the goal for this season for this franchise? Because the goal for this franchise might be different than Tibbs' goal. Tibbs' goal is to make the playoffs. The franchise's goal and best interest might not be to do that this year.
Absolutely. I mean, you need to, it goes back to just conflicting narratives of what you're striving for. The team can be very good still in the future with Carl Towns. That alone puts him in a decent spot.
How good can this team be right now? I mean, I don't think the three of us really believe they're a playoff team as they're currently constructed. But
I don't.
If you guys could guess on like a final season win total, assuming that there's no major injuries or anything like that, what is the peak for this team right now as they are currently constructed with Covington and Sarge coming into the fold?
Well, I would say the 9 losses they've already accrued is obviously a step in the wrong direction towards the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to consider that Tom Thibodeau's system is confusing. And it's going to take time. It's going to take time for Covington and Sarge to, you know, acclimate. So that's another kind of sidestep there. So I wouldn't say that they for sure don't have the talent of a playoff team, but given the 9 losses and given... It's just going to take a little while for the team to kind of catch their breath, I would assume. I don't know. I mean, I'm fascinated to... I don't think they'll play tonight. We don't know yet, but I'm excited to see what they do look like, and then we can kind of, you know, form that opinion. But there have been some players who have been playing pretty well that aren't related to this situation. I mean, Derrick Rose for sure comes to mind. He's made 16 of his last 26 3-point attempts he's taken. Which is
still trying to wrap my head around that right now.
Right. I mean,
at what point do we petition Derrick Rose for the 3-point shootout at All-Star Weekend?
I mean, so there have been some good developments with specific players on the team. Again, Josh Okogie, we've talked about him before. He's been somewhat exciting. There's some talent here, and you could see this team rattling off some wins. They have 5 straight games at home that take them into Thanksgiving, and 10 of the next 12 are at home. So you could see some stabilization. It's not like the West has been as daunting as we initially thought it was going to be, from the Rockets to, you know, the Thunder and even the Jazz. That's not, it's not totally the juggernaut we once thought. I'm not putting the odds anywhere near 50% for the Wolves to make the playoffs, but I don't think the assumption should be zero. I think they got some players.
Yeah, they have some players, but 4-9s, this is a deep hole to dig out of. And I haven't seen anything
this year.
Conference. Yes, I haven't seen anything this year that has shown me to have any bit of faith that they can dig out of this hole and even get back to 500 at any point.
What about the game against the Jazz? Rose 50 points, no Butler there.
Dude, you cannot expect Derrick Rose to give that. I know he shot well, and he's been a very good player, which is, again, and we've said this repeatedly. Yeah, they had fun
in that game.
But you're not going to get a Derrick Rose 50-point effort probably ever again. That was a moment where it was really, really cool that night. It was great to see. But that wasn't so much of a redemption story for Derrick Rose. It wasn't a I'm back moment as a wow, I did that moment. It was him crying at the end of the game didn't say to me, wow, Derrick Rose is back and could potentially be not what he once was, but close to it. That was a wow, what could have been type thing for me. I think that was a great story for 24 hours, not a great story that's going to carry them through the season.
Right. I agree. I mean, you can't anticipate 50 points out of anyone, but I think it's enticing to see not only him having success as a starting caliber player, but also, I mean, the rest of the players in that locker room love Derrick Rose and are excited.
Seems like everyone in the NBA loves Derrick Rose.
Totally. And so I think you could find somewhat of a new normal, and a lot of it hinges on Rose staying good, and I don't think we know
and
that.
And healthy.
Healthy, yeah, that's a good point.
I think that's probably a bigger obstacle for Derrick Rose either staying good or staying healthy. Which one do you think is less likely? I think him staying healthy is less likely than him staying good.
Right. I think we can also assume that Towns is going to be better without Butler there. And then another question becomes, and I'm not sure about this, is what about Andrew Wiggins? Should we assume that Andrew Wiggins is better without Jimmy Butler in place? And I don't know. I mean, we saw him getting to the bucket a lot more before Butler was here. Maybe some of that comes back. I don't know. That's going to be an interesting development, and probably a critical one in this team potentially, you know, pursuing the playoffs. Also, we can't sleep on adding two probably pretty good defenders. And I mean, Robert Covington made the all defensive team last season.
Yeah.
I mean, defense and specifically defensive rebounding is a huge issue for this team right now. You've added some defenders. I mean, again, it's going to take some time, but this team might not be terrible.
How will Robert Covington and Dario Saric fit into this fold? And how will Jimmy Butler fit in with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid in Philadelphia? We'll find that out from Derek Bodner of The Athletic in Philadelphia. He will join us next. You are listening to Raised by Wolves Live. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore. We'll be back in a few minutes.
They're very talented players. I think that those guys could have succeeded with anybody. You know, because they're just that talented, and we're very honored to have them. And, you know, we don't talk about Jared enough. You know, he's been around the league for a minute, you know, and he's found success as well. So never disregard his and disrespect his talent, you know. What he brings to the game as a vet and as a player. He's been around the league for a while.
That was Karl Anthony Towns in response to what the Timberwolves are getting in return for Jimmy Butler. The trade was made official today. As you're listening to Raised by Wolves Live, Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham of 1500ESPN.com, Dane Moore of 1500ESPN.com, and Zone Coverage. We are here breaking down the big news over the weekend of the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Philadelphia 76ers as they pull off a trade for Jimmy Butler heading to Philadelphia. Joining us on the line now, he covers the Sixers for The Athletic. Derek Bodner is with us, and Derek, I'll start you out with this. First of all, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
What was your sort of initial take back when you found out that this trade was happening on Saturday?
Well, I think at first it was one of surprise. You know, the Sixers hadn't been one of the teams really listed as a likely suitor. A lot of focus seemed to shift to Miami and other teams who didn't have the cap space to pursue Butler in free agency. And you had heard a little bit of a little trepidation over adding Butler to that young clubhouse. But when you look at the particulars of the deal, you know, I think when you look at the Sixers, they spent a lot of their assets in obtaining Markelle Fultz, and so far that hasn't worked out. And because of that, they have fewer assets to include in a trade, so you had to take a little bit of a risk to try to get somebody as talented as Butler is, so it made sense from that perspective. You know, I think what Butler can provide is what the Sixers very much need. The question is whether or not they can keep everything, you know, sort of humming along in that locker room that Brett Brown has, you know, so skillfully managed over his 6 years now.
Derek, we know that obviously there was a tipping point on Friday night in Sacramento when it was deemed that Butler would never play again for the Wolves. Was there a moment in Philadelphia, because they've had a bit of an underwhelming start, they're 8-6 through their first 14 games, was there a moment where they decided they needed to make a move to upgrade here?
You know, I think it was, excuse me, I think it was a lot that the asking price probably dropped. You know, there were reports and rumors that at one point, Minnesota was asking for first-round picks in addition to the package that was eventually accepted. So I think it was probably that the ultimatum from Butler caused the asking price to drop, which changed the Sixers' perspective. But no, I think the Sixers are at a point where they would have made this specific incarnation of the trade for a little while now. I think the asking price from Minnesota dropped to accommodate that.
Derek, to pivot a little bit off of Butler and to what's coming back to Minnesota in Covington and Saric, I guess could you kind of give our listeners an idea of what these two players are going to bring? While they might not be the superstar caliber that Jimmy Butler is, they've been contributors to a very good playoff team last season. Is this something that we should be excited about?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we'll start with Robert Covington. Covington is a real legitimate, you know, all defensive team caliber defender. He's probably got a little help with Kawhi being out last year to make that first team, but he will make another all-defensive team. I think that's in his future. He's a little bit better. I would say Jimmy Butler is a little bit better of a one-on-one defender. I don't think Robert Covington has quite the foot speed that an engaged Jimmy Butler has, but I think Robert Covington has great length. I think he has great anticipation, and he's one of the smartest team defenders around the NBA. I mean, his ability to digest what's going on around him, make the quick reads, make the quick decisions, and make those rotations is really excellent. And you combine his athleticism, his size, his anticipation, you know, he really gets by on those more than he does pure athletic foot speed. And, you know, he has really incredible hand-eye coordination. Like I said, he processes stuff on the defensive side of the court very well. And it's just, I think you're going to be really impressed with the overall defensive package he gives you. Like I said, probably not quite the one-on-one defender that Butler is, but an excellent team defender. And he really does. I mean, he'll defend Kemba Walker one night and Blake Griffin the next night, and he won't look completely out of place on either. Offensively, he's mostly a spot-up shooter. I do think his handle has gotten a little bit better this year. He spent the offseason dedicated to improving that. That doesn't mean he's going to be creating off the dribble, but he might be a little bit more comfortable attacking a closeout that he receives, which would be big for his game. But he's largely a spot-up shooter. He'll go through some stretches where he'll shoot, you know, 45% for 2 weeks straight, and then he'll come down and he won't be able to buy a shot for 2 weeks, and he'll probably drive some people insane because of that. But he has a really high release point. He has really deep range, and he is a high volume, you know, and at the end of the year, he'll end up at 36% from three. So, Saric, when he was scouted overseas, he was a lot more, you know, he has a lot of creativity in his offensive game that I think doesn't necessarily translate to the NBA level all the time. Like, he doesn't have the athleticism to be a one-on-one ISO scorer too much, but you'll see his creativity in passing at times in the half court and especially in transition. He really is a skillful passer, and he's improved drastically as a shooter. Now, he struggled so far this year, but if you look at his European career, you know, he got better from the three-point line pretty steadily. You look at his NBA career up until this struggles recently, he was getting better every year. So I think, you know, I expect him to end up in that 36-37% three-point range. He has started to turn it around from the perimeter of late. But what you're really getting is a high IQ player. He'll hustle, and he should be able to make spot-up shots. The question is going to come on the defensive side of the court. He doesn't have maybe that kind of defensive versatility to switch. He'll struggle against some matchups. He just doesn't have the athleticism to really be an impact defender. But like I said, he's a smart team defender, and he will give you effort on that end.
So with the deep focusing on the defense, I mean, that's obviously the biggest need for the Wolves. We're 27th in defensive rating, Thibodeau's first two seasons, and now they're tied in last in the NBA this season. How much do you see, namely Covington's presence boosting the Wolves? Is he good enough to make them an average defense, or just is this going to be a somewhat nominal shift from a team defensive standpoint?
Well, so I think, you know, I think when you look at team defense, a lot of that does come down to your big men and what can they do as that last line of defense? What can they do as a communicator to make all of those rotations work? I think a lot of it, you know, I do think that the big man, the five spot, is the most important piece in that cog. And if Karl Anthony Towns, when he's playing there, doesn't improve on that end, at least from what I've seen, then I'm not, you know, one player is probably not going to fix that. But if Karl Anthony Towns is able to make those reads, is able to make those rotations on a more consistent basis, then a guy like Covington is going to help elevate that. You know, if, let's say Towns improves, he's, you know, maybe now you're in like the 20 range defensively, then Robert Covington will help get you up there. You know, but I think he's best, Covington, is when you can switch a lot, because like I said, I think he can really defend a whole host of offensive players. I think he's best when you have other players who can make those correct reads and decisions as well, and he can then, you know, play a little free safety. He's real good on the weak side. You know, I'm not sure there's a outside of in his prime Tony Allen that's going to really transform a defense by themselves on the perimeter, but I think he's going to be a very important piece.
Derek Bodner covers the Philadelphia 76ers for The Athletic Philadelphia. Check him out on Twitter at Derek Bodner NBA. All right, personality-wise, where are these guys going to fit in the Minnesota locker room? Obviously, Jimmy Butler was one of the loudest voices in there, and it's a locker room right now that's kind of looking for a little bit of leadership. And it may be foolish for these guys to come in and expect it to be leaders from the get-go, but what personality types are they?
Well, I mean, they're certainly both very beloved in the Sixers clubhouse. Like, they get along well. They're not going to necessarily ruffle any feathers. Covington is probably the more vocal of the two. You know, especially he is, outside of Joel Embiid, the second longest tenured Sixer in this locker room. So he kind of grew into that role as, not, I wouldn't say a leader, but a very prominent voice in that locker room. He certainly will get on guys if they need to. He will, you know, help them learn their responsibilities. He's a good clubhouse presence. Will he be the most commanding personality in that locker room? Probably not. He's a little bit of a laid-back, quiet kind of guy, but I do think he will add value there. And Šarić, his effort is really infectious, and he takes a lot of self-ownership of problems. Like, you will not have to tell him when he's at fault. He'll already know, and he'll be willing to accept that. You know, in the past, he has sort of said that starting is important for him, and I think part of that is he just feels like he gets in a better rhythm when he starts. I don't think it's necessarily like a selfish thing, but I think he's just more comfortable with it. But he will become a fan favorite. I'm pretty sure of that. And he will become a clubhouse favorite too, because like I said, the effort he plays with is pretty infectious. And I think that's where he's going to make the biggest impact in terms of the clubhouse.
Derek, what is your thought on what is going to Philadelphia? The best player in this move, in this trade, is going to the Sixers. How will Jimmy Butler fit in with that group, with Embiid and Simmons and that core in your mind?
That's a great question. So on the court, you know, clearly there's, I think, a little bit of concern as fitting with Ben Simmons because he doesn't really shoot and doesn't provide a whole lot of value right now off the ball. And you're going to need to get Jimmy Butler touches in the pick and roll and in the mid post. But I think that's a skill set the Sixers were going to have to acquire anyway. I think, by and large, that's what they were hoping to get out of Markelle Fultz. Like, I think they always thought they were going to have this learning curve with Ben Simmons because they need somebody of that skill set. And I think Jimmy Butler will provide them with something they desperately need. And to be able to get that with good defense and a capable, you know, spot-up catch-and-shoot shooter, I think that is a good addition to their core. The question is always going to come down to, you know, how Jimmy Butler fits in that locker room. And is Joel Embiid, still only 24 years old, and I think we forget that sometimes, and really just in his third year, is he, you know, he's the most commanding presence in that locker room, but he's really a little bit of a sneaky introvert where he's not always the loudest voice in that locker room. And I think a lot of times that falls on J.J. Redick. So can he step up and, I guess what I would say is, keep Jimmy Butler's worst instincts at bay? And I don't think this is a locker room where they're going to worry about effort or passion. Like, I think Joel Embiid, I think Jimmy Butler will respect Joel Embiid in that regard specifically. But the question is, like I said, will Joel Embiid be kind of that loudest voice in that locker room and keep Jimmy Butler's worst instincts at bay? I think there's probably a situation where you're glad that you have the next couple of months to get to know Jimmy Butler personally and in that locker room before you have to commit that five-year contract to him.
Is there a question of depth for the Sixers with giving up two pretty quality role players in return to get Jimmy Butler? I mean, it sounds like, at least, I mean, obviously you know better than we do, but it sounds like the depth has taken a little bit of a hit with this move.
Oh, it certainly has. I mean, they need to find some shooting. They need to find some depth. They still have, you know, their non-taxpayer mid-level exception that they can use for a little under $4.5 million. I would expect they'll be aggressive in the buyout market when that happens. They got a trade exception recently in this trade, actually, which I will expect they will look to use. They certainly do. And not only did you give up two starters, but Markelle Fultz is a very questionable fit with Jimmy Butler and with this new starting lineup. So how much can he contribute? Outside of Wilson Chandler and Mike Muscala, they just don't have a whole lot off the bench right now. I would expect they will be aggressive over the next couple of months.
Find him on Twitter at Derek Bodner NBA. He covers the Sixers for The Athletic. Derek, we appreciate the time, and maybe we'll have you on the podcast again soon when the Sixers play the Wolves. That March 30th Saturday night game at Target Center is going to be pretty interesting and pretty eventful, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Derek. We will come back and wrap things up, put a bow on this thing, and sort of tease what we have coming up at 2:00. That's the Touch 'Em All podcast live with Judd Zolgad, Matthew Collar, and Derek Wetmore. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we'll come back for one final segment. This is Raised by Wolves Live. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, and Dane Moore. All right. One final segment here of Raised by Wolves Live. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore. Breaking down the Jimmy Butler trade that happened over the weekend with Jimmy going to the Sixers and Covington and Saric headed to Minnesota. I don't think we anticipate Covington or Saric playing tonight against Brooklyn, right? I don't think we'll see them.
They weren't at shoot-around this morning.
The trade didn't become official until after shoot-around, and technically they're not allowed to be around the team until that comes down. It became official at 1:00 Eastern, 12:00 here, so they couldn't be there. But I would be surprised if they're on the court. I mean, they'll be around the team. They'll likely be on the bench. I don't know if they'll be dressed or not, but I would be surprised if they are if they're actually on the court tonight.
I would too. And I think the biggest thing is, so that Wednesday, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what those guys' role is.
Yeah.
And I mean, Covington, I think the assumption is he's starting in place of Butler once he gets here. And then I thought what Derek said was really interesting about starting being important to Saric. And
yeah,
you obviously have a bit of a logjam there at the big man position. Does somebody fall out of the rotation? Is that Gorgui Dieng? Is that Anthony Tolliver? I mean, Tolliver's been great. Gorgui's kind of struggled, but those have been guys that, you know, Thibodeau has put his stamp on. Are they going to, you know, are they going to play? I'll be looking for that on Wednesday.
Somebody is going to have to fall out of that rotation, right?
Yeah, there's just not enough minutes.
There's just not enough room. You've got 96 minutes between both, you know, the power forward and center positions. I mean, there's just not enough minutes there to give all of them significant playing time. I mean you got to play Cat, and I mean, Saric has to play.
Right. Yeah,
right? He's a young player, and we know Tibbs has been kind of hesitant about playing young players, but he's got to play because he's the wild card in this deal. Like, if they can get really good run out of him, then they can, you know, eventually down the road feel like they won this trade. We know what Covington is. He's a really good role player. He's going to defend and rebound and shoot threes for you, but Saric is the piece to me that I'm looking at that they need to really find out what they have in him at this point.
And I thought what Derek said about Saric needing to start was really notable. My biggest takeaway from the conversation with him too, it's worth noting Taj Gibson yesterday was asked about it. He said he doesn't care if he comes off the bench or started, just wants to win.
There you go.
That's true. And Josh Okogie, don't sleep on him falling out of the rotation.
Worry me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would assume that does happen though with Jeff Teague coming back and Andrew Wiggins healthy either tonight or on Wednesday.
All right. Thanks for listening. For Manny, For Dane and Danny, I'm Manny. We'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves. Thanks for listening. Touch 'em All is next.